Welcome to Common Thread. We hope you find these lessons helpful, but also we'd like to get to know you. If you go to our website /newcomer, we'll send you an email, some things to read about the community, and an invitation to a personal chat. If you're here in Raleigh, maybe face-to-face. If not, on Zoom. We hope you will. CommonThreadChurch.org/newcomer. Okay, here's the lesson. I hope that we have been as good to them, but maybe not as good as we could have been, especially at the first. Because when we got here, we had been hurt by religious people. We'd been kicked out of our denomination, our building had been taken away from us, and the temple folks are religious folks. Sure, they invited us in. Sure, they were being very kind to us, but they've got a steeple on their building. That's religious. So can we trust them? Probably not. So we were hurt and maybe not as kind as we could have been. Maybe going forward, we could do a little bit better. But the folks at Temple have been gracious to us. And they have been patient with us, and they understood our hurt, and they understood why we were hurt. And our community survived a very difficult time because they invited us in at a time we were in need. And now, their congregation, along with many in the United States, is in decline. And this is an expensive building to maintain. They just spent $250,000 to replace the roof over their sanctuary. And so they need to sell their building. And they are working out a lease-to-sell arrangement with Capital Church, the one that meets there at 11 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And that agreement is going to allow Temple to remain in the building and use the building for as long as Temple exists. And that agreement is going to allow Dr. Mike to continue being their minister for as long as they exist. And they will not have to carry the weight of the building. Now, Capital is eventually going to need the whole campus, and there won't be room for us. So this is a really good thing for Temple, and that makes me really happy. And it also makes me a little bit sad, because Dr. Mike and I have become good friends, and I will miss bumping into each other. I have a home office. I could work from home every day, but I come down here a lot of days just to bump into folks. But even the way that they have approached making this big decision for them has again been very kind to us and very thoughtful of us. A primary consideration for them as they've gone through this process has been to make sure that we do not feel kicked out again. They know what happened to us. They don't want us to feel that the church is doing that to us again. So they have gone out of their ways to give us as much time as we need, as much advance notice as we need. In fact, Dr. Mike has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting, trying to help us find a new space. So this is a good thing for them. It will be a good thing for us. It is kind of a sad thing. So we're going to be moving. What are we going to do? Well, I've spoken to the board, and I've spoken to the team leaders. Scott's first thought, if you don't know, Scott is our treasurer. Scott's first thought was, let's look for commercial space. Let's look for a place that we can adapt and make it our own. And then Tim Harrison knows a guy who priced out some commercial space for us, and it would be more than double what we pay now. Now, we may have to bite the bullet and just do that. But I'm hoping not, and I want to give you a little context for why I'm hoping we don't do that. The pandemic opened our imaginations. We have seen what can and what cannot be done online. And now we realize a little bit more about the actual space needs that we have. As you're going to hear today, we are going to need more community engaging space and less sitting in rows space. We're going to need more eating together space. Pray God we can eventually eat together again. And less listening to a talking head space. So we are more flexible now than we were, and that has created imagination and possibilities that we might not have considered. So that's one reason I would like to think about it. But the second, sharing space with another congregation taps into a historical trend. In the years after World War II, from 1945 straight through until 1965, America saw the highest rate of church attendance in our whole history. We also saw the highest involvement in all civic organizations, the Rotary Club and the Kiwanis and the sports leagues and unions, all kinds of collective communal organizations. And during that time, from 45 to 65, and then probably for about another 10 or 15 years after that, churches built buildings. And they built the buildings to handle all of the people who were attending. Temple did that. This part of the chapel was built in the 40s. That part was built 66, I think 1966 is when it was done. But after 1963, almost too slow for people to notice, probably didn't really start noticing this for another 20 years, involvement in all communal organizations began to decline. Robert Putnam, the bowling alone guy, he wrote a book that documented this whole process. It's taken 120 years, 60 years up and 60 years down. But what that means for us is there are a lot of underutilized church buildings in our nation. There are a lot of underutilized church buildings in our city. And if we could share, now if is kind of a critical word, you'll see in a moment, but if we could share, it could be good for us and it could be good for the other congregation. Dr. Mike has told me on a few occasions what they have been able to do because they receive our monies every month. It has been good for them. It's been for good for them, and it's been good for us. Now, here's the if part. We live in a highly polarized moment in history. Dr. Mike introduced me to another minister. Their church has more space than it has people. Would have been a good arrangement. And I went to talk to that minister, and he was a little bit apologetic. And he said, I am sorry. I didn't even know if I can stay here anymore. I know my board, and I know that they won't agree to this. And we talked about a bunch of things, but what it fundamentally came down to is this could be very good for us, but it's the gay people thing. In our community, LGBTQ people have the same standing as everybody else. And we put that out on our website. And that's a thing these days. It's a painful thing. It's a splitting churches thing. It's a splitting denominations thing. And again, this is an inflamed moment in history. And so that stuff is just going to happen. It's too bad in that particular instance because this was a beautiful facility. And it was half the price. Oh my God. But I think we can find, Dr. Mike has introduced me already to a few, some group that is not inflamed by the culture wars that are going on by this moment. And if that happens, and if we can find that kind of relational aspect, we have learned how to be really good neighbors. And if we were able to do that, we would spend less money, we would use less stuff, we would heat and cool less, we would make a smaller footprint, and our monies would go to supporting another congregation because it is financially difficult to have a big facility and be in decline. And the bonus could be maybe we could develop a relationship that would be enriching to both congregations. So we're going to be moving, and we're going to try first to share space again. And if we can't, then we'll start looking for commercial space. And now to the feedback document. 5 questions to help us make the decision about moving. The first one is, do you know somebody, or do you know somebody who knows something about something? Have you got a guy? Because a place that we can meet is what we're looking for. Now, right now, we are talking to Ridge Road and Millbrook Baptist about the possibility of sharing space. For both, should those work out, it's going to be an extended time before it could happen. They're both in the middle of some things, and it may not even work out, but if it did. So, do you know about some space? It doesn't have to be church space. It could be any kind of space. Do you know anything? That's question number one. Take a moment and fill that out. Question number two is, let's look at the 440 Beltline. We're going to try and stay within a mile of 440. Looking at the 440 Beltline, are you closer to, really this is north, south, east, and west, are you closer to Six Forks and 440? That would be about where North Hills is. Or are you closer to New Bern and 440? That's where Wake Med is. Are you closer to South Saunders? Or are you closer to Hillsboro over by Meredith? Go ahead and fill that one in. Third, fourth, and fifth questions. If it costs substantially less to meet at a not Sunday morning time slot, I had one conversation and the cost was going to be about half. If it costs substantially less to meet on a not Sunday morning, number three, would you show up? Go ahead and fill that in. And number four, if you would show up, pick two of your preferred time slots. I've listed several there: Saturday at 4 p.m., Saturday at 5 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m., Sunday at 4 p.m. Pick two of your favorites. By the way, if you came in late, commonthreadchurch.org/feedback. That's where you find this form. Number five, pick two of your least preferred time slots. Same time slots, but these would be your two least preferred. Okay, that's going to help the board make our best decision. And now, on to some bigger picture stuff, some roadmap of the future stuff. Let's talk about the other pandemic. You may have heard me speculating these last many months about what post-pandemic church is going to look like. And one thing I have said repeatedly is whatever it looks like, it must focus on the other pandemic. The pandemic of broken connections, the pandemic of relational isolation. Now, as a community, we have been rethinking religion for a long time. In the book, I captured work that we did together over 10 years, rethinking our Christian story, because the Christian church is behaving badly these days. But we're not any worse than any other people, but bad behaviors are rooted in bad instincts. And bad instincts are rooted in a bad narrative. And that narrative is often boxing us in. And so we went back and looked at our narrative, and it turns out the narrowed religious narrative that we all inherited in America in the 21st century, it's not the whole story. It's not even a particularly helpful version of our story. So we deconstructed the story, and then we began to reconstruct it. And then, for another several years, we did the same around our spiritual practices, expanding our practice to include the whole of our tradition, not just the narrow few spiritual practices that we inherited. And you will see the fruit of those years of work every time we talk about work in the circle, every time we talk about the communal and the contemplative and the learning and the serving practices. We have spent a lot of time rethinking, stripping down, and rebuilding, and so we know how to do it. We know how to rethink. We know how to strip down. We know how to rebuild. We know how, when some inherited way that it's always been is getting in the way, keeping us from fulfillment and life. We know how to strip it down to the kernel of goodness that was there, that was behind how that thing got started in the first place, and then building on that kernel to do something that is helpful and fruitful and relevant and rooted historically in our tradition. And so now we need to do that again. We need to strip down and rebuild the organizational structures that have defined church. But we also know from experience that this kind of work is difficult. It takes time. It takes trial and error. But here's the thing, we know how to do that work as well. We've done it. So in March, I said this: when our religion was hammered out and the way that we do church was figured out and institutionalized, we lived in a world very different than the world we live in now. We lived in a world that had very little access to content, because a lot of that happened even before Gutenberg's printing press. We went to a place to get content. And that at the same time, we didn't have the mobility that we have as a society now, so we had built-in community. The world that we live in today is just the opposite. It used to be community-rich and content-poor. Now it is content-rich and it is community-poor. With one click, two clicks at most, you can get more content than you can absorb. And it's good content. You can get TED Talks that are profound and powerful. You could not do that when we were designing the way church should go. So we've got plenty of content, but broken community is killing us. It's a crisis. It's unfortunately a crisis that we are doing our best to ignore. We medicate the implications of that crisis with prescriptions. We distract ourselves from the crisis with possessions and with screens. But broken community and lost connections is a crisis. It's a physical health crisis. It's a mental health crisis, emotional health crisis. It's a family crisis. It's a well-being of children and how they will contribute to the world crisis. Our kids from 18 to 22 years old, 80% of them suffer chronic loneliness. And that affects their bodies, and it affects their minds, and it affects their emotions, and it affects their well-being, and it affects their ability to contribute to their families and to our society. I've talked to these kids, and for them, for their cohort, loneliness is a very real and very painful part of daily life. Now, if they're age 23 to 38, that number goes down to 71%. But still, 71% chronically lonely. And all the way up the age groups, older folks only fare a little bit better. And the first pandemic, the virus pandemic, it shined a light on the other pandemic. It shined a light on the stark contrast between how little time, focus, and energy we spend building meaningful relational time into our lives and how much we fill that time with lesser stuff, stuff that drains us all the while purporting to fill us. And if church is going to be relevant and do what church is designed to do, bring about spiritual health and well-being, we must become first and foremost a community-building institution. Now, here's the thing. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that's what church is supposed to do. If people do show up to church, the number one reason they report for showing up is they're after community. They're looking for community. But the problem is, any success that we have been having offering community to people in the context of church has been in spite of our organizational structures, not because of them. Like every institution in our society, church often falls prey to the temptation to think of ourselves as a consumer institution. The thinking goes something like, we, the religious institution, will offer to you, the consumer of these spiritual services, a service. We will offer it to you. You pay a small fee, and we will provide those services for you. And this is a key word in the mix. We judge the merit of an institution when we have this consumer mindset by the phrase, am I getting anything out of this? We come to the institution or we don't come to the institution. Am I getting anything out of this? I'm paying my fee, my time, my energy, my dollars, whatever. I'm paying my fee. Am I getting anything out of that? That's what you do in a consumer relationship. That's what you do in a transactional relationship. It makes sense. But that paradigm, when applied to church, becomes toxic. Now, we can be forgiven for falling prey to that temptation because everything around us is designed that way. All the things, all the situations that we exist in are designed according to that basic framework. So, of course, we think in those patterns. But that thinking, that pattern, kills community. If consumer approach to society, if it could create healthy relational spaces, it would have done it by now. And we would not be dealing with the other pandemic. But it can't. And it isn't. So if we are going to rethink church for the future, it's going to be cross-grain to everything we're comfortable with. If we're going to rethink church for the future, it's going to be counterintuitive. It's going to be uncomfortable because it's going to be different. And here's the rub. We don't like different. So here's what we need to know before we even talk about what this might look like. You're not going to like it. There's going to be resistance. You are going to have resistance. We need core systems to change, but we don't like core systems changing. We like things the way they are. Also, consumer arrangements are, by definition, easy. Look, the consumer institution says to us, you are busy. You're out there chasing your best life. So sit on down, have a rest, and we'll do it for you. We'll make things convenient for you. We'll make things easy for you. All you do is just pay your small fee. And if enough of you will pay your small fee, then we'll be fine. It'll be good for you. It'll be good for us. And again, when that is the organizing principle behind relationships, it's killing us. It's killing community. Community is much more costly than that. So I'm going to suggest a rough draft roadmap for our community. But before I do, I'll tell you this. Even if you believe this is a good thing, you're not going to like it. The bottom line will be something that you've heard me say before. Community is made by community. There is no them that will make community for us. There is only us. So if there is no them, then we make community. And if we don't make community, then community doesn't happen. And here's the thing that's going on in a consumer-saturated society. More and more people are not making community, which means more and more community is not happening. And more significant relationships do not happen. And more support does not happen. And more strengthening does not happen. And more transformation does not happen. And more aha moments does not happen. Because it is really easy to sit on the couch and consume stuff. But that does not make community. And doing too much of that is undercutting our whole society. This ugly, ugly shitstorm that is going on in our society right now. A big reason why is too much consuming of what is easy for me and too little getting out there and getting close and getting in contact and getting in proximity. We don't do those difficult things that used to be baked into a society and are no longer baked in. But that's what consuming trains us to do. To sit back and wait. Oh, I don't have time. Oh, I've got too much going on in my life. Oh, I don't know how to do that stuff. I might not be good at it. I might do it wrong. Oh, it makes me uncomfortable. Oh, I don't like that. Those instincts are killing us. So I'm suggesting before we even talk about a roadmap, you watch for those instincts because they're going to come up. Be ready for the resistance when it does. Because here's the thing I wrote in the book about sex education. This is a countercultural idea, I said. But here's the thing. When a society is insane, counterculture is sanity. When a society is insane, counterculture is sanity. But counterculture is hard. And I got to say, Amazon is not helping us. I love that they bring us what we want and they do it fast. I read about getting more omega-3s in my diet, and this article that I was reading suggested that I might like smoked sardines, and poof, next morning, smoked sardines are on my doorstep. Turns out they're not as horrible as I thought they were going to be. If you drain off some of the oil, not so bad. But here's what's happening. Amazon is changing my brain. Netflix is changing my brain. Facebook is changing my brain. Even Harris Teeter is changing my brain. They are saying, you sit in your car or you sit on your couch and we'll do you. And that framework is killing us. I am getting the message, Doug, it's all about you. So you just sit back and relax, Doug. You sit on the couch, Doug. Don't do the hard thing. Let us make it easy for you. apply that to community, and it is killing us. So we work really hard on community. So you've got your friends. You've got people that you talk about your soul with. So sit back, enjoy the good life. Other people, our duty to our society, transforming the world around us, caring about the 71%, caring about the 80%, screw them. You've got your people. Sit back and relax. That's what Amazon does to us. That's what Netflix does to us. By the way, I like that Amazon does that for me. We just can't apply that same instinct to spiritual community. We can't sit back and be comfortable. It doesn't work when it comes to making spiritual networks. It doesn't happen. So our post-pandemic future will be organized around forming authentic community. And we will have to go toe-to-toe with all of the instincts that are being trained into our brains that make us not want to go there. But I said earlier, we know how to do this kind of thing. We felt that same kind of brain resistance when we began rethinking our religious story. We felt the same kind of brain resistance when we began to rethink what the spiritual practices are. And I used to say back then all the time when it got really uncomfortable, I would say, hey, we would not be doing this if we didn't have to. We would not do this uncomfortable thing if we didn't have to. But what we have been doing, the way we have been telling our story, the way we have been doing our spiritual practices, it is a slow death. So we have to. And it's the same thing with reorganizing church in a way that is going to be more demanding of us. A community-making way will be more demanding of us. We will have to go toe-to-toe with the resistance because it's killing us. All right. That was the preachy part of our community meeting. And it was like half a lesson. I counted the words. But now, how are we going to do that? How will we organize post-pandemic church to be a community-making institution? Well, there have been several folks in our community who have been test driving little beta projects. Try it, see if it works. Then listen and try it again. And then reshape and tweak and then try it again. And that's been happening kind of in several places around our community. And on the basis of those experiments on what our post-pandemic future is, I'm going to suggest four possibilities of what our future might look like. First, we are going to develop a communal contemplative ministry, a communal contemplative ministry. Second, we're going to time shift our weekly lesson. Third, we're going to develop multi-generational Sunday. And third, we're going to create community-owned community. Now, before I talk about each one of those, our timetable for even experimenting on those things has gone completely cattywampus. I had a very different community meeting in mind when I was planning it sometime in June. I did not count on Delta. Things are a lot fuzzier since Delta happened, so it's hard to pin down timetables. So today is going to be less about timetables and more about a generalized direction that we will be heading. So now we've already started the first one. We've already started doing contemplative practice in a communal kind of way. Contemplative practice is critical to spiritual well-being. Of the four categories of practice on the circle, it's the one that gets the least attention, and it's the one that is the least habituated in our lives, so consequently it is the one that is the most difficult to sustain over time. So, in the past, we've done contemplative practices on Sundays. Now, we did not do that on Sundays because that was the best time slot for doing it. We did it because that is our big time. That's our golden hour. And we wanted to put our important thing onto our big time. And that was noble, but I don't think that's the most effective. My hope over the next year is to develop a communal contemplative ministry at our church, not primarily on Sundays. We've already started doing our Monday morning meditation. They go live on Sunday nights. Maybe we're going to start making them go live Sunday mornings. So we're going to get feedback from when is the most convenient time slots. Those that go out every week, they're on audio. You can get it on our podcast feed. It's on our video, on our website, or on our YouTube channel, on Facebook. The audio and the video are a 10-minute orientation to a week of spiritual practice together. We focus together on one of our four core contemplative practices. We rotate through mindfulness meditation and examine or self-examination and the welcome prayer, which is mindfulness in the moment, and loving kindness meditation, expanding our compassion for others. Also, in that 10-minute meditation, we bring about a question to think on, to ruminate on, to reflect on over the course of the week together. The second thing we've already started is an online chat group in the new app, a place to post and to read about how that question is going for other people. So we've asked the question, what can you control? What can you not control? We've asked the question about where have you grown in an area where you can't control? So, and then we just talk to each other and we explore our own lives through that. And so we'll talk about that on the app together. The next thing I hope to implement a time each week, maybe a time each morning. Matt said that Insight Timer has a group feature that might allow us to do this, where we show up together on X day at X time, or we show up every morning at X time to practice mindfulness together. The bell chimes and we start together. The bell chimes and we say, thank you for doing this with me. Have a great day. I'm hoping that we can begin to implement that in the next days, months, I don't know when. And next, I hope to resume lunchtime Zooms. They went very well during lockdown. Very simple format, 30 to 40 minutes. We Zoom in during lunch, or we would Zoom in the morning time, or Zoom in the evening, and ask each other two very simple questions. How's your practice going? And where are you growing? Where is your growing edge? Robin introduced that question to us years ago. It's been a very helpful question. And knowing that that question is coming at the Friday Zoom, or whenever it's going to happen, we pay attention through the week. And sure enough, pay attention and we tend to grow. Now, those are four possibilities to begin to create a communal practice without getting more people into the building at a time slot when we can't get more people into the building. But here's the thing about every one of those. Every one of those is a non-consumer thing. Every one of those is a not easy thing. You have to go out of your way to participate. You have to set a reminder to listen to the Monday morning meditation or the Sunday morning meditation. You have to schedule checking the app to see how are people doing on their spiritual journeys, or you will forget. You have to intentionally pay attention to your own growth. And then you have to jot some notes. And then you have to go in and post your story so that other people can be reading your story and be stimulated in their experience by knowing what's going on with you. And you have to face down the resistance anytime you post or anytime you tell a story. Oh, what if I don't do it right? What if I sound stupid? Oh, what if people don't like me? What if I'm not as spiritual as they are spiritual? It is not easy. It's not easy to carve out a lunchtime or an evening Zoom. It's not easy to get up in the morning to meditate with other people. These are not easy. But what they are is communal. And one day we will normalize them. And once we have normalized them, and once we have habituated them, we will have done that for each other. And we will do it for others who are yet to come. And we will have normalized a communal way to be contemplative together. And when we do that, we will foster authentic spiritual friendships. We will be paying the price required to push back on the other pandemic. So we're going to develop a communal contemplative ministry. And if you would like to help make that happen, to the feedback form, pull out your phone and just say, I'd like to help. I'd like to help and I've got a lot of experience and I'm ready to go. Or I'd like to help, I don't have any experience, I'd like to get some experience, but I would like to be a non-consumer and I would like to help make that happen. Okay. Second, we are going to time shift our weekly lesson. The timing of this one is going to be affected by the third one, and the third one is really being affected by Delta, so I don't know exactly when this will start. I was thinking September, but I'm not holding my breath. We'll see. I hope to develop a robust podcast and video with two weekly episodes. our weekly meditation, and our weekly lesson. We already have those. They're already going out. We just haven't really developed them. We're making both super accessible. The meditation is 10 minutes long. The lesson will be 22 to 25 minutes long. Those are drive to work kind of listen to easy, or go for a walk length listen to easy, or get on the treadmill listen to easy, or sit in the sauna listen to easy. So we're going to make them, they're already being made, super accessible. And there's two reasons that I want to do that. First, I hope to continue expanding our reach beyond Raleigh, because we've been getting to know some faraway folks. We've been learning how to do hybrid spiritual community. We've been learning that you can engage people spiritually when they are far away. But more, I hope to time shift our lessons in order to free up more time on Sundays. The reasons will become clear in just a moment. The reasons are clear, but here's the concept. It's not really our concept. It comes from education. It's called flipping the classroom. Flipping the classroom just means you do the lecture with kids at home. You send them home with a CD, or now you put it online, and then you do the homework in class with the teacher. And it's a better learning environment. It's better for growth. But here's the thing. I know the challenge that flipping the classroom creates, and I know what our, and I know you. I know what our challenge is going to be. Even if we make it super accessible, even if it is just 22 minutes and you could listen on the treadmill, you are going to show up not having listened. I just know that's what's going to happen. So I am pinning a lot of hope on my ability to recap the lesson well in 8 minutes. And maybe to persuade you that if you haven't listened, that you would listen. All right, now I just lost my page. So say hello to each other or something. Right there at your table, say, good morning. Good morning, how are you? All right, I found it. Stop talking. So I'm pinning a lot of hope on my ability to recap the lesson and maybe incentivize you to go back and listen if you didn't listen to it. I work really hard on our lessons. I know it's a valuable part of our community, and I know part of the challenge of this is now I'm asking two time slots of you, one where you're doing a thing and one where you're doing a thing, and two time slots in your head is just more confusing. And did I mention we would not do this if we didn't have to? I've been playing around with my last several lessons, trying to see how I would get that down to a word count that would be about 8 minutes. I think I could do it. I think I could do it well. And I think what I can do with that 8-minute recap is set us up for a fruitful, expanded, what are you thinking afterwards, even if you haven't listened to the lesson. But here's the thing I bet you've already noticed just about this one. It's not easy. You've got to schedule a time to listen. You've got to develop a new habit, a new rhythm of listening. Maybe you even have to think ahead about the what are you thinking questions that will come out earlier in the week and be prepared for the discussion before you get here. So, not easy. But it will make it possible for Sundays to be less talking head and more building community. So we are going to experiment with time shifting our lessons. The third thing, we're going to work on making Sundays more communal. And assuming we get to stay on Sundays. I'm thinking we will, but we'll see. When Delta is over, I hope to involve our kids and to involve our teens and to use music more effectively and to use storytelling more effectively and to use food more effectively to help us develop multi-generational community, because that's how human beings have for all time formed community. I've been working with Mariah. We've been talking together. She teaches music in Wake County. She's helped me think about some of the ways that might look, how we might do that. And so we'll get to that, but that will come later. But here's what we've been working on this summer. When we've been dismissing you folks on the live stream early, we've been in the room here working on doing what are you thinking better. Drawing on learning theory, I've been working to develop better questions. I've had a few hits, gone really well. I've had several misses, did not go well at all. I know it's not going well when the groups are discussing something that has nothing to do with my question. But I'm learning how to frame better questions, and we're going to get there. And we've tried several formats. We've tried large group. We've tried smaller group. We've tried mixing it up back and forth. And after we finish, we stay an additional 5 minutes, and I ask folks, okay, how did that go as process? I especially ask introverts, and I especially ask newcomers. I kind of put them right on the spot. Hey, you're new. How was that for you? How uncomfortable was that? You know, not this, me asking you. How uncomfortable was that process for you? Now, sometimes they say it right then, but then sometimes they come talk to me later, and they do it in private. Then we tweak, and then we try again, and then we repeat the process, and we have learned a lot. We're not there yet, but we've learned a lot. We still have to work out how to make the process of forming the discussion groups fun, because right now they still have a little bit of evoking a dread response. Oh God, am I going to have to do that thing? So we got to be able to get beyond that, and I think we can do that. We're not there yet, but I think we can get there. But even though we haven't worked out all the bugs yet, here's what I've been hearing as I've been asking people about their experience. I've heard, boy, this is helpful. You know, I didn't know that I was thinking that until I heard myself in the context of this smaller group discussion articulating that. You know what? I have been thinking much more about the lesson as I go through the week because we've been engaging in this way. And here was my favorite, the big hit one. I know some people that I didn't know. And I know them in a way that I didn't know them. We're seeing people after these what-are-you-thinking times not leave the room. We've had to actually make a plan for how to get our kids and our adults hooked back together again, because what will happen is after we dismiss, folks will reform a circle around the table, and they'll get some coffee, and they'll stay, and they'll stay, and they'll stay. And that's what we're after. Organizing ourselves in order to incentivize and create more community. A little bit of socializing community, but also a little bit of sharing the journey together, community. Now, to make time for that, flip the classroom. To make time for that, 8-minute recap. And later, I hope we can add in food. Food lubricates conversations. Right now, we do hermetically sealed, germ-free snacks. But someday, we'll unleash the latent Julia Child in our community, and we'll be able to eat real food again. Carol brought in blueberry muffins. I didn't care. I ate one. All right, we're going to make Sundays more communal. Community-owned community. You've heard me say that term a lot. I want to talk about what that might look like for us going forward. What does non-consumer spiritual community look like? A few practical steps. Now, you've heard me pushing the app for a long time, and here's why I've been pushing it. It's because we can use the app to all make community together. This is Heather, and this is Kate. Kate had to leave a little bit early, but you can reach both of them through email on the Who to Talk To page on our website. Kate will give you any tech support you need. If you're having trouble getting into the directory, or if you're having trouble getting the app loaded onto your phone, or if you're having trouble accessing groups within that, or finding our church in the app, she'll help you do that. Heather is overseeing the groups module in the new app. And so a little bit about that. Groups are how we work the circle together. Groups are how we work the circle together. It's how we do the spiritual practices. What the app does is make the organization and implementation and creation of groups happen with a lot less central administration. And one of the big deficits that we have as a community is central administration. Because many times that means me. And I just suck at central administration. And so I am excited about the app because I realize what can happen that now does not include me. I become a bottleneck that holds things back. It is much easier now, and we are much less dependent on some organizer or some administrator or somebody to be able to create those things. So it'll be much easier for us to make community together. So my hope today is that this will be the day that you download the app. And this will be the day that you get into it. If you want to do that, you go to our website under resources, and just there's a page called Get the App. And then I hope that once you get in, you find us, you put in our zip code, or if you put in the name of our church, or put in both, it'll bring you to us. It'll open up our section in there, and then poke around in the groups module and maybe join one. And again, any tech support needs you need, talk to Kate. Now this fall, Heather will be showing us how we can use the app to start groups, to join groups, to create spaces for community to happen, to work on mitigating the other pandemic and do that work together. So some groups are already in the app, but here's what we're going to do today. We are going to create some follow-up work for Heather. And we are going to do that by going to the feedback form. So if you would, please go back to the form. And you will see that there are several groups questions. After the, will you help make contemplative communal? After that question, there's one that says, Heather, please contact me or connect me to an existing group. And you will see several options in there. There's Enneagram, there's self-awareness, there's life stories, there's several options available. So go ahead and click on that one. And the next question says, Heather, I would like to start a new group if you will help me. Now, there are a few ideas already listed. Those were actually Heather's ideas. There's parents of younger children, maybe a play date group. Parents of older children, maybe to commiserate together. Maybe an outdoorsy group, or a photography group, or lifelong learning book clubs group, or a podcast group to talk about things. Fill that one in as well. And the last group's question says, Heather, I am really passionate about X, and I'd like to start such a group, again, if you will help me, but you didn't list my passion in that last question. So if that's you, fill that one out as well. The group's module is a big part of how we can develop community-owned community. The group's module on our apps, because again, groups are how we work the circle together. And a final thing about community-owned community, and that has to do with our kids. You are going to hear me talk a lot in this coming year about our children, our teenagers, and our dream is for spiritual community for them. Our dream is to have our children together through their nursery years, their preschool, elementary, and high school years, spend enough time with one another, week in and week out, on trips and doing events, doing lock-ins together, and over time becoming very dear to one another. Our dream is that they learn to do spiritual community together. Our dream is that they learn in very age-appropriate ways to work the circle together and establish the norms and habits in their lives of a spirituality for a lifetime. Our hope is that they learn to do community in a way that is bigger than the school cliques that kids inherit when they go to school. Our dream is that they learn to have conflicts, they all will, and then get to the other side of those conflicts and to bond with kids that they would likely never bond with at school because those kinds of kids don't hang out with each other. Our dream is that they learn to meditate together and they learn to love and be loved. They experience what it is to be loved by adults. They experience what it is to be connected to and loved by their peers. And I have that image in my mind for two reasons. Number one, I experienced that. Yeah, I don't have time for a story. I've got a really great story. I've experienced that. And it was transformative in my life. And I am who I am because of what happened during those years. But the other thing is we have experienced as a community, quite some time ago, and I know it can happen, and I've seen it happen, and that's what that's one of our high priorities for the coming year. This is Shelby, and this is Lindsay. You just saw Lindsay take the teens out a moment ago. They took about as much as they could listening to Doug. Shelby and Lindsay are going to be very, very good for us and for our kids. I've gotten to know each of them. We meet on a regular basis, talk about their souls, talk about their lives, talk about their skill sets. But as wonderful as they are, they cannot make spiritual community without some of us joining in with them. Because I also know from experience that a leader can run a group, but a leader cannot make community. That happens with a team. So the last feedback question, Doug, I will help create authentic spiritual community for our kids. Don't exactly know how, don't exactly know what you're asking for, don't know exactly what it looked like, but yes, that is a passion of mine, and I have bandwidth to contribute to that. Maybe with our young kids or our elementary kids or our teens, or maybe it would be connecting our parents together so that we can begin to do that one for another. Now this one, our kids and our teens, this one is really fuzzy because of the virus. We are using up about the bandwidth we've got just trying to implement safety protocols upstairs. And we'll have 20 kids 1 week, and we'll have 6 kids the next week. And it's very difficult to begin to build on that because some of it's the summertime, some of it's just what this pandemic is doing to us. But the virus is going to end. And authentic spiritual community for our kids is a big priority for us. So my hope is that some of us carry a deep passion about children. Some of us will look toward the future, take a non-consumer approach to community building. Somebody did that for me. I bet somebody's done that for you as well. And we cannot rest until we do that for our kids. So, big changes set before us. Now is the time. Go click the submit button down at the bottom, because it would be a shame to have done all this work and not get it registered. So go down to the bottom now and click submit. Change evokes resistance. But again, this is one of those adapt or die scenarios I described in that lesson I did, I think it was in February or March. We have to change. And change does evoke resistance, because human brains, we've all got them. But also, again, we've done this before. We know how to rethink and strip down and rebuild, find a new way, find a better way to experiment, to adapt, to learn, to grow, and to rewire our habits in response to best practices. We know how to be nimble. We know how to pivot. We can adapt to a new world. We can overcome inertia. We've done it before, but we can't work on the other pandemic. We can't build community unless we all build community. And that's a great segue to the offering. Because, yes, please do prepare your offering. But I really want to talk about what I say every week when we talk about the offering. Investment in spiritual community invests a profound return. We put into community our time. We put into community our energy and our love, the dollars. But that investment is an investment in one another. And here's what one another does with that investment. One another takes our time and takes our energy and takes our love, takes our dollars, and then turns around on another day and gives it back. And in the process, amplifies the experience. Because now we do that for one another. That amplification process happens when we invest in one another and one another invests in us. So I've just described a bunch of possible ways that we can organize to build healthy community. Maybe some of them will get changed. Maybe some of them will get scrapped. We're going to trial it. We're going to error it. We're going to figure it out. But none of what I described today will become anything if we don't make it so. So my invitation today, as it is each week, invest in spiritual community. Find a place that you can invest. Find a thing that you're good at. Find people that you can love, and find people that you can strengthen, and find people that you can support, and then allow them to love you and strengthen you and support you in return. So as soon as you've pushed submit, let's get to work. As much as Delta will allow us, let's get to work restitching the connections that are being lost in our society and building a healthy form of community and repairing our world. Amen. So, those of you on the live stream, we're going to dismiss you now. We're going to spend just a few minutes opening up the floor here in the room, but that doesn't translate very well on the live stream. So if you would, please put your hand on your heart. We'll dismiss you. Let's remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. Love and joy and peace, kindness, goodness are in us because we carry the light within us. And if you would extend your other hand to our city, and let's look for opportunities to share what's in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you all. You are dismissed. You almost dismissed. We'd love to connect with you in real life. commonthreadchurch.org/newcomer. And if you'd like to take an ownership stake in the well-being of the community, we all contribute online. You'll find a donate button at the top of our website. See you next time. We'd love to connect with you in real life. commonthreadchurch.org/newcomer. And if